Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of OEM TV. I'm Eric Mills with Microsoft. I do Windows Server marketing at Microsoft, and this is going to be another video in our technical series on Windows Server. But before we get to the details about the episode, I want to be sure that you know about Orca. Orca is the new OEM Reseller Community Academy that just launched. You can go to aka.ms/ORCA and go to Orca. Why would you want to go to Orca? If you sell OEM Windows Server or Windows Client or Office, then this is a place where you can download content, you can get your questions answered, and you can watch the episodes of OEM TV. So check out Orca at aka.ms/ORCA, O-R-C-A. And now, about the next episode of OEM TV here, we're going to talk about storage spaces hardware design. So as you know, storage spaces is all about storage virtualization and all the benefits that you get with storage virtualization. This is going to be a technical video that's going to show you kind of in more detail how do you deal with SMB3 and how do you build that scale-out file server. We're going to talk about SAS expanders and JBODs and performance considerations and just storage architecture in general using storage spaces. So I hope you enjoy the video. And we'll see you next time on OEM TV.
Hello there. In the next 15 or so minutes, I am going to go over with you the design architecture and storage considerations for Windows Server 2012 R2 storage spaces. And then I'm going to walk through the setup of a standalone storage space with you. So as an introduction, storage spaces came out with Windows Server 2012. They've been enhanced with Windows Server 2012 R2. Basically, what they enable you is cost-effective, highly available, scalable, and flexible storage solutions, similar to what you'd get on a SAN. The flexibility comes from storage virtualization. So if you wanted to compare some of the components, your back-end SAN enclosures that had all your disks in there, we're going to substitute SAS JBODs. And then when you talk about your controllers, your SAS controllers that are inside of your Windows servers, these are going to be interfacing the JBODs. The JBODs obviously going to have disks in the enclosures, and you can have SAS, SATA, and SSD disks, and you can tier those. So you can assign whatever speed of storage you need to whatever the workload is that you want to deploy. The nice part about this is you don't have to buy really expensive controller and management software. It's all done through Server Manager and PowerShell. So some of the new things we'll talk about here. The Windows storage stack has been fundamentally enhanced to incorporate new abstractions. So we got storage pools, which are basically a collection of physical disks. And then when you aggregate these disks into logical disks, it allows you to carve those up and make volumes out of them. And then once they're volumes, you can use them for just about any application. The requirement is, if you're going to use storage spaces for remote workloads, example would be SQL Server storing databases remotely on a storage space, or Hyper-V storing virtual hard disks remotely on a storage space. The application environment must support SMB3, which is basically UNC naming, but it uses Server Message Block version 3, which allows you to keep sessions alive if you migrate the storage space from one server to another. So the ability to keep that storage space online when you move it from one host to another, that's a very powerful piece, and that comes with SMB3. The virtual disk piece from Windows Server, this is where you can take storage spaces and storage pools, and then assign those to volumes that you use for applications. We have resiliency levels I'll go over with you when I set up the storage space, but basically we have everything from Mira to RAID. So the storage resiliency is actually embedded in the storage architecture, and that's why you take care of everything through the operating system, and you don't have to buy the management software that comes along with a lot of SANs. All right, so logically, the layering comes like this. Block-based storage is any disk-based storage. The virtual disks sit on top of the disk-based storage. So the virtual disk is going to be what you access through an application. Now, we're going to put a layer in here for a scale-out file server. The Windows storage stack, if you deploy it the way you're supposed to deploy it, uses high availability, and that's what gives you your ability to move workloads from one place to another. the scale-out file server is a cluster component. So if you did not set up a cluster, you can still take advantage of virtual disks and storage spaces. They're just going to be on a standalone server. So if that server goes down, your storage space goes down. So if you're virtualizing workloads and consolidating services, things like that, that's where you really want to have a high availability environment. And the hardware and the professional setup that you needed 2 or 3 years ago by, you know, a consultant or a Microsoft partner, that's not really required anymore for clustering. You could basically set up a cluster with about 5 keystrokes now, 5 clicks. So the scale-out file server is a cluster component, but we don't have to have this layer in here. We could just use standalone storage spaces as well. What goes on top of that? This is really going to be we're using Hyper-V as an example here. So the Hyper-V environment uses your storage and compute to virtualize workloads. What brings this all together is that Hyper-V, instead of storing those VHD files on direct attached storage, you're going to actually store those on the scale-out file server through a scale-out share. And that's what allows you to use storage spaces in a real scalable and dynamic model. So the server message block architecture supports high-speed networking. If you want to get the best bang for your buck in the networking, you might as well just get 10 gig network infrastructure, and you could take advantage of NIC teaming, which if you had two cards in there, it'll aggregate the throughput. There's RDMA support as well. So the network should not be a bottleneck. You can get as much speed out of an Ethernet network if you design it correctly, and that means collapsing a backbone and probably doing some NIC teaming as you would through a run-of-the-mill fiber channel environment like a brocade environment. So the idea behind this is that the layered architecture gives you the ability to put things in pools. So storage is one of those resources in an environment that tends to be, you run out of storage a lot faster than you run out of everything else, is basically what I'm trying to say. Most of the time as you go to a virtualized environment, as you start backing up and creating your virtual hard disks, you don't realize how much storage that takes. And then once you start doing anything with workloads, you start sharing the storage architecture between your backups and your storage of your master disks and your VHDs, and it just becomes unsustainable. So the nice part about a storage pool environment is you can add storage on the bottom layer without affecting anything on the top layer. And you can expand those storage pools dynamically without redesigning and recreating the storage pool. Here's a layered look at a typical JBOD setup. So if we had 4 servers, let's say we had file servers, we had 4 file servers in here, and we wanted to take advantage of high availability. If you look at the layout of the way this diagram shows the wiring, JBOD A and JBOD B are connected with the SAS expanders. That's the yellow cable. A SAS expander is just something that takes 2 JBODs and puts them together as one. So if we had 24 disks in A and 24 disks in B, basically what we have is a 48-disk JBOD setup, and the SAS expanders make that possible. Each server should be connected to each one of the JBODs, and this gives you the high availability. So what we've got in the servers, each one of the servers has got 2 dual-port SAS controllers, and the SAS controllers communicate with the JBODs. The JBODs contain the disks, so you can have a variety of SAS, SATA, and SSD inside of your JBODs. Generally, when you're designing this, you want to design it for availability, so you want to have dual controllers, dual-port controllers, that gives you the high availability. You're also, actually that's fault tolerance, and you also want to have the JBOD infrastructure set up so that you've got probably about, for most workloads, it's 10-15% SSD, and then the rest of it either SAS or SATA. These can be set up in a cluster, or they can be set up standalone. So a lot of the new OEM hardware that comes out is going to be one chassis with multiple server components inside of it. So this might be just a single chassis. And then inside of the chassis, you've got your expanders, and your expanders go to your SAS controllers, SAS controllers to the JBODs. So SAS is one of those architectures that's fairly inexpensive to design and set up, and it's very vendor neutral. So you can expand your SAS using multiple vendors' hardware, and it's a standard so that you don't have to worry too much about compatibility between architectures. So the layering on this is going to be servers connected to JBODs, JBODs connected to expansion ports, so that if you needed to grow your environment, you don't have to redesign the architecture. You can just expand it out on the fly. here's a logical view of that. So if we got FS1 and FS2, and we want to have availability so that both of them can access both JBODs, you've got four ports on the JBODs, and you've got four ports on each one of the servers. And like I said, this can be dual-port SAS controllers if you want it to be. When you install MPIO, which is multipath IO, it allows you to have multiple paths to the same JBODs, and this is for availability. So it'll aggregate, or if one of those paths goes away, you'll still have access to the JBODs. So MPIO is a requirement if you're going to have multipathing. Multipathing is something that gives you fault tolerance in your design. So as far as architecture goes, once you leave the server, SAS controllers to JBODs, JBODs contain the disks and the enclosures. And then the design of this is once you got it all set up, you can take as many physical disks as you want and put them inside of a virtual disk. And then basically any storage engineer will tell you that the more spindles you have, the faster your disks are going to be because it's going to control your IOs per second. So if you need more IOs per second, more spindles. If you need more IOs per second, add some SSD. But you can expand both on size and performance just by adding disks to the JBODs. Okay, so as far as functionality goes, storage pools are just a group of disks. Resiliency layouts is going to be either mirror or RAID. Continuous availability is only in a cluster. And what continuous availability means is if I failed my scale-out file server from one node to another, continuous availability means as long as there's one surviving cluster node, that resource will be online while the failover occurs. You're not going to have any downtime on your workloads. Storage tiers, basically you have two tiers with storage spaces. You've got your SAS or your SATA, and then you've got your SSD. So what you can do is dynamically set up policies so that you can move workloads between tiers as the IOs per second require it. Operational simplicity, it's designed and it's implemented through Server Manager and PowerShell. And then multi-tenancy means you can isolate different workloads on the same JBOD architecture just by creating separate virtual disks. And that makes sure that one tenant's information isn't available to another tenant's information. A storage pool is basically just a group of heterogeneous disks. Physical drives can be implemented through raw storage, and those raw storage devices will combine into virtual disks. So like I said, you can do USB, SAS, SATA, and you support SSD. Eventually what ends up happening is you're going to use Hyper-V in our example of an application, and you're just going to store your VHDX files on the scale-out file server. When your cluster storage pools, it requires SAS drives in 2012 R2. So in this demonstration, we're going to create a standalone storage space. There's going to be another demonstration that we do where I'm actually going to show you how to set up the clustered storage space, and that's going to be using SAS drives. So with a storage pool, 2012-2012 R2 present the included physical disks as one logical entity, just like a SAN does, and then you carve off your LUNs on that and decide what physical disks and what volumes you want to create. You can allocate capacity of a storage pool by creating one or more virtual disks and assigning those virtual disks to a volume. Okay, so as you build this up, we got our physical storage on the bottom. Storage pools are going to be collections of physical disks. Virtual disks are based on storage pools. If you want to expand a storage pool, you can just add additional disks to it and grow it on the fly without recreating the wheel. Next thing is the application layers. There's tons of different applications that can consume SMB resources. Anything that can consume SMB resources can consume a virtual disk. And then finally, your Windows application layers. These are virtualized applications. In this case, we'll talk about workloads running on Hyper-V. But really, you're application agnostic here, meaning that the application doesn't necessarily need to know that it's using storage spaces. Finally, tiered storage pools have hot and cold data support. So you can actually move workloads now between SSD and SAS. And you can do this based on policy and throughput and IOPS requirements. If you have SSDs in your JBODs, then when you set up your storage pool, it's going to offer you tiering support, and then you'll see that you can go through and create policies as to when you want to do the renegotiation of the tiers and how often you want to do it on the fly.